History isn't just a bunch of names and dates and facts. It's the collection of all the stories throughout human history that explain how and why we got here. Welcome to the History Unplugged podcast, where we look at the forgotten, neglected, strange, and even counterfactual stories that made our world what it is. I'm your host, Scott Rank. Welcome back to our series, Forging a President. In the last episode, we saw how Teddy Roosevelt went on his first buffalo hunt. He successfully killed a buffalo, and he caught the bug. And after all the tragedy that befell him, his mother dying, his wife dying, he decides to finally get on the train to go back west and open up a ranch. About a year after his hunting trip on June 9th, 1884, Roosevelt was back on the train. The lights in the world had gone out for the man, watching the sagebrush turn purple in the dusk outside his window. News was the ranch had done well, and Roosevelt was thinking of buying another 1,000 head of cattle. But the black heart was on him, and he knew only one type of self-medication: action and erasure of the wound. He lost his political career, his wife, his mother, and essentially his child, whom he had given to his sister to raise because even the baby's name pained him, Alice Lee. One may wonder why Teddy Roosevelt had suddenly bought a ranch when he was out hunting buffalo 2 years earlier, but it wasn't as serendipitous as it may seem. The Badlands cattle boom began in 1883, the year he plunked down his first $14,000. The open range policies of the Badlands and Dakota Territory meant that men like Roosevelt didn't have to purchase the land, just the cattle. For many, it seemed a lucrative investment. Books like The Beef Bonanza or How to Get Rich on the Plains fueled interest in investing west of the Mississippi. The availability of raw land and the railroad with its hungry eastern market made raising cattle a high return investment. Or so it seemed. There were considerable risks. Cattle often died from severe winters or drought or disease, and many small players like Roosevelt had been wiped out. But the West, as a presence in young Roosevelt's life, seemed to have that one dynamic place where people could go to recreate themselves. And being a rancher was at the top of the Western pyramid. The truth was, it was in style for well-to-do young men to have a ranch. And for many young men, owning a ranch was a romantic notion. Ranching, wrote Roosevelt later, is an occupation having little in common with the humdrum workaday business world of the 19th century. The free ranchman in his manner of life shows more kinship to an Arab sheik than to a sleek city merchant or tradesman. Many dudes, like Roosevelt, went west looking for fortune, romance, and adventure, and of course, these dudes had to be well-armed as ranchers. Every ranchman carries a revolver, Roosevelt would later write, a long 45 Colt or Smith & Wesson, by preference, the former. When after a game, a hunting knife is stuck in the girdle. It should be stout and sharp, but not too long, with a round handle. I have 2 double-barreled shotguns, but besides carrying a weapon, the ranchman also has to look the part. Roosevelt was outfitted in New York. One description reads, he spent a small fortune. Besides the big hat, the buckskin shirt, chaps, bridle, and silver spurs, he had fancy alligator boots, a silver belt buckle, beautifully tooled leather belt and holster, a silver-mounted Bowie knife by Tiffany. His silver belt buckle was engraved with the head of a bear. The silver spurs had his initials on them. His Colt revolver was engraved with scrolls and geometric patterns and plated with silver and gold. On one side of its ivory handle were his initials. On the other side, the head of a buffalo to commemorate the one he had shot in 1883. At 25 years of age, Theodore Roosevelt was essentially starting over. And Little Missouri was as wild and untamed a place as any in the West. As Herman Hagedorn wrote in Roosevelt and the Badlands, Little Missouri was a terrible place. It was in fact wild and woolly, according to Roosevelt, to an almost grotesque degree, and the boomtown was a little cruder than its twin across the river, Medora. The men who drifted there were, many of them, outcasts of society, reckless, greedy, and conscienceless, fugitives from justice with criminal records and gunmen who lived by crooked gambling and thievery of every sort. In 1884, Roosevelt went west with no definite plan as to when he would return. He no longer had a vocation, or really a life of any sort. The word dispossessed comes to mind. His wife, who was just 17 when he first saw her, had been taken away along with his mother. Many times, he must have gone over in his mind, the courtship of Alice Lee. It had lasted over a year and had him in so many knots. He retreated to the woods one night and upon returning, shot a neighbor's dog who barked at his horse. The train rattled on to the Dakota Territory under a desolate moon. Gazing out the window, Roosevelt thought of his father, who told him that being sick is a sin. He thought of his mother, who felt that ever since the Civil War, the household had split in two and that she would never fit in with her husband's world, and never really did, taking refuge in one rest cure after another, her perpetual neurasthenia shielding her from the Yankee world she found so abysmal. Roosevelt recalled the boys who beat him up at private schools and the asthma that could never be cured, but ignored through the will of the mind, he said, along with the doctor's pronouncement that he should lead the life of a shut-in given his heart ailment. All that was falling away now as the train plunged further into the West. For it was 1884. Geronimo wouldn't be caught for another 2 years, and just 3 years before, Billy the Kid was gunned down on the famous gunfight rage at the OK Corral. The frontier still existed, and a young man crushed by the twin pistons of disease and cutthroat national politics was going back to the only place the world made sense. Roosevelt thought again of his wife and mother, the black ice of depression nipping at the corners of his mind. The truth was Alice Lee was a lot like Roosevelt's mother. Mittie was a damsel in distress much of the time when Teddy was younger. Rest cures were abundant, and Alice Lee could easily have slipped down the same path. Some of the Roosevelt clan would later say T.R. would have become bored with his vapid wife and her constant yielding to her husband's wishes. But of course, the 25-year-old Roosevelt would not have believed it. He simply wanted to go as far off from all mankind as he could and mend his broken heart. A boyhood dream of going off into the wilderness by himself reasserted itself, and Roosevelt was even more determined to get away after meeting with the men running his ranch. It was quite possible he had never returned to the East. Instead, he could become one with the thousands of others who disappeared into the West, a sort of national safety valve for the lives pummeled by the concussive pressures of capitalism, a developing country, and the onerous demands of emerging bourgeoisie life. Many just ran away, and many had nothing to lose. Many were never seen again. The promise of land and a new life had lured them west. The East was stratified and money interests dominated, but if a man could survive in the West, he might become wealthy in land and cattle. Teddy had set up this promise of the other life marvelously on his first trip west, with the purchase of cattle and his staking claim to land in the age of free range. Even though that age would be dead by 1890, along with the concomitant rituals of cowboy culture that followed a free and open frontier. Why not? Why not just become a rancher, a cowboy, a wholly different person, a man who could no longer feel the horrible pain that made people worry he might never recover? He stared out into the train car at the dark landscape with its sliver of horizon light. He breathed deeply and blinked against the speckled stars of the great darkness. No lights now. No cities. The Dakota Territory was alive with rattlesnakes, coyotes, bears, Indians, murderers, and the great untamed will of a nation grappling with the last growing pains of an open frontier. Teddy Roosevelt was slipping away from civilization, and there were no cell phones, no landlines, just some puny telegraph lines knocked down by Indians who didn't understand why men would risk their lives for a wire on a pole. On June 9th, Roosevelt arrived and was met at the station by Bill Merrifield and Sylvain Ferris. The Maltese Cross Ranch was doing well, and the boss had arrived. Accounts have Roosevelt meeting Arthur Packard at his printing office, home of the Badlands Cowboy. Packard was young, like everyone else in Little Missouri, and he had graduated from the University of Michigan and gone west to become the managing editor of the Bismarck Tribune. Bismarck, being a Wild West town, didn't appreciate his editorializing, and besides having to do everything, which including typesetting, Packard had to keep an eye out for crazed gunmen who took offense at his prose. Packard, with the newspaper man's nose, had heard of the wild towns of Little Missouri and Medora and headed out for the story. He ran into Frank Vine and they went to the saloon. "You told me you never see an honest-to-God cowboy," Frank said. "Seeing that feller at the far end of the bar? Well, that's a real cowboy." Packard wrote about that feller, describing his guns, hat, chaps. Vine went over and whispered to the man, who noticed Packard's attention. After Packard had finished writing, he went out to ask the telegraph operator to mail the letter to the next train, but the black icy night made him think otherwise. The next day, the man who he had written about approached him outside of town. "So you're a newspaper feller. I thought you was a deputy sheriff coming to arrest horses. You gone out last night, I would have killed you.